from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, it is time for the Derek Shelton Show, brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you, there will be soon. The Pirates manager on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Shelty, we heard from a little birdie. Okay, it was our friend City Limits that you were out at training camp today. Are you still out in Latrobe, or where are you right now?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of a cornfield right now driving back, but did have the opportunity to get out and watch a little bit of practice today and, talk to some people out there and spend some time with Coach Tomlin. So it was a nice morning.
Cool. Well, back here, as I'm sure you know, there was a lot of blowback, I guess, a lot of criticism, quite frankly. Coming your way after the game on Sunday, Shelty, and I'm wondering if you're aware that that was the case, that there was a lot of upset around town.
I'm assuming anytime we make decisions or we lose, there's going to be people that are upset about decisions that are made and why they're made, and, I understand that. I think we've talked about that continuously for 5 years, and that's why you guys get to have a show, isn't it?
It is, but the games matter now. I mean, quite frankly, your in-game decisions for 4 years had no bearing on a season. They do now, and so there's a lot more scrutiny. Is there any that you regret from the other day?
Well, I mean, be specific. Which ones are you going to ask me about? I think a vagueness of the question there, like, which ones do you want to talk about?
Okay, yeah. I didn't know if there was one particular decision when you went back and reviewed the game and said, I would have done that differently, but let's talk about Holderman facing Peterson that one.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I mean, he had a 100-mile-an-hour fastball middle away to the deepest part of the ballpark, and we got him to two strikes. We didn't finish him, just like Friday night we didn't finish Josh Bell on a 103-mile-an-hour fastball away that got hit the opposite way. It's one of those ones in retrospect, and I think, you guys know me well enough to know that I review that and had Beeks there and didn't make that decision. I mean, it didn't turn out to be the right decision because there was a home run. And do I regret it? I don't know if regret it. I review it and kind of go that way, and it didn't turn out our way. But I understand how that becomes a situation that gets scrutinized. I get that, and I think I've always told you that I will embrace, any criticism that comes that way.
Well, the other one obviously is the decision to bunt You know, you as you might know, you had the analytics crowd up in arms big time by that decision to, you know, quote unquote, give away an out. But, you know, what was your thinking there? And I mean, do you feel like, because my thinking, Derek, even when, you know, in real time and not with the hindsight, was, well, if you bunt here, they're going to walk Reynolds anyway. So you're basically taking the bat out of Reynolds' hands. But did you feel that too?
Well, okay, so I love the fact that you guys are on the analytics side now. That just makes me smile.
No. Hey, hold up. I am not.
Oh, okay.
I was just saying the analytics crowd.
Are you on the analytics side now?
No. What I'm saying, Derek, was the analytics crowd hated the bunt for the reason they always hate the bunt. My point was I didn't like it, not because of analytics. I just thought, well, they're just going to walk Reynolds and bring the lefty in anyway. So I'm just asking, you know, like what you were thinking.
Right. I think that's a good question. So my thinking is if we bunt IKF there with Thompson on the mound, Thompson's a heavy ground ball guy, heavy, like 65% versus right-hander. So if we roll into a double play there, then that means Reynolds comes to the plate with two outs, and to tie the game, we have to get a homer. And maybe we don't get to Cruz. You know, so we're trying to get to 2-3. I understand and totally embrace the fact that if we do bunt, that they may walk Reynolds. But that means that they're also deciding to put the winning run on base. So a manager is going to have to be pretty aggressive to be able to put the winning run on base. And then the other thing is if you go back to Arizona, Cruz actually had a pretty good at-bat off puck. So all those things went into it. My biggest concern there was, if we roll into a double play with a heavy ground ball guy, I may not get Reynolds the opportunity with runners in scoring position, multiple runners in scoring position, or the fact that Cruz may not come to the plate. So I understand how the flip side of that conversation, and definitely wrestled with it myself because, you know, they made that decision before we even started the inning if we got the first two guys on, what we were going to do. And, you know, ultimately we popped up the bunt. Brian got a base hit, and then we got to where we're at. And, you know, Cruzy had a good at bat. He just didn't finish it.
Well, let's go back for a second here to Peterson and Holderman. And the way I see it, Shelty, I don't know if it's just hindsight. I think if you stop the game right there, you know, and you have a poll of everybody alive who watches the Pirates, would you rather have Holderman, who's been struggling big time, face Marte and Peterson here, and who would rather have Beeks or Chapman even in this situation? I think most people go for the latter, and I think the crux of the criticism is that you were prioritizing preserving people rather than winning the game in front of you with all hands on deck and a day off Monday. Is that fair?
Yeah, that is fair, but the thing is you're not going to get Peterson there. You're going to get Grichuk, most likely.
Wouldn't you prefer that?
Well, off Beeks, he's 3-for-9 with, I think, 3 extra base hits. So, you're playing devil's advocate either way. And I get, again, understand those are the decisions that are going to be critiqued and going to have to do that. Ultimately, the decision did not work out for us. So understand that criticism completely. But that's just, you know, the way that I ended up making the decision.
But aside from the actual matchup, were you looking at preserving guys?
No, was not looking at preserving guys. I mean, Beeks was up. Like you said, I could have made the decision, and Beeks pitched the next inning.
The one thing that it holds true about both the Friday game and the Sunday game is that guys hit pitches that were 100 miles an hour plus out of the park. Both pitches, I think, I mean, I don't know, you obviously have watched the video. Were they bad location or was just good hitting? I mean, Josh Bell hit a pitch in the opposite field that was 103 miles an hour on the outside part of the plate. I don't know. Isn't there a point where you have to sort of tip your cap to the other team?
Yeah, and I mean, again, going back to understanding why the decisions will be critiqued or criticized, but yeah, Josh hit a ball 103 that was on the block away out to right. I think it's the hardest ball ever hit for a home run in the big leagues, and Jock Peterson went to the biggest part of the ballpark on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, so I think the issue I probably would have had is, like, if it would have been wrong pitch, you know, and we make a mistake, that's at some point, you know, we had major league players against us that took good swings, and unfortunately, in this situation, it cost us a game.
That being said, Holderman has struggled in recent games, and you know that's been now I think a 3 or 4 game sample size. Are there some things that you have to think about in terms of the situations you use him in, or is he still going to be one of your main high leverage guys?
He's still going to pitch in leverage, you know, and I think if we go back, and I'm going to skirt this very, very carefully because you guys know how I feel about this, but if you go back and watch some of the sequence of pitches in those prior at-bats, they were very well executed, and they did not end up on the side of the Pirates, if I can be as discreet as possible or discretionary as possible there.
Well, you did mention after the game that you were I think you used the word pissed about losing the game and did kind of bring some of those issues. Is that something you take to higher authorities or?
Yeah, well, I was frustrated with how that inning went out. And then I was also frustrated with the fact of, you know, and I'm sure you guys are aware of it from watching the game, that there was a pitch violation called and then we took a strike away after a pitch was thrown. And I don't think I've ever seen a pitch get taken away in a situation like that where, you know, a pitch has been thrown, they take a strike away. The rule was wrong. And that was part of my frustration after the game, too, when I was asked about, you know, why I was mad.
After the game, you were at least a little critical of Holderman. Now that you've, I guess, scoured the video and maybe seen that he was squeezed a little bit, do you still feel that way? I think you said Holdy's got to be better. He's got to make a pitch after the game, Shelty.
Yeah, I stand by that statement and agree with that, and I think that comes down to the execution portion. And that's been where Holdy is scuffled a little bit lately, has been the execution. It has not been the quality of the stuff. It's been the execution of the stuff. And I think that's, like, going back to Paul's question, that's something that you know, we need to clean up a little bit. So, yeah, and in that case, I 100% still believe that. Now, you used the word squeezed, and I won't disagree with you, but that was part of my frustration, too, post-game, after being able to watch, you know, the sequence of at-bats.
Yeah, I mean, part of me felt for the guy because he's obviously been getting too much plate, and then he throws perfect pitches, and they're called balls, so there was that part of it. But one more strategy question is go back to the second inning, and you guys are putting up some runs. You have first and third. Reynolds is on first. Were they giving you a free bag there? Why not send him? Because that rally where you could have used another run or two with Cruz at the plate ends with a double play. Why not take the free bag if indeed they were offering it?
Oh, in when Cruz grounded into the double play?
Yeah, in the second inning.
Yeah, we actually ran on the 3-2 pitch that Cruz hit into the double play, and he hit the ball right at Chattel, and it was too hard, and they turned it. So Brian was actually running. So if you're talking about running prior to that, probably could have. I don't know if they would have thrown or not in that situation, but was trying to leave that hole open. And then the times the pitcher was giving us just wasn't conducive. But it was more about leaving Cruzy more room to hit.
Okay, so you want to leave? Yeah, I was definitely talking about before that. Like, why not just go right away? But maybe they weren't giving you, in your mind, the free bag there?
Yeah, and if you looked at where Suarez was playing, too, I think Michael Taylor was at third. He was right on top of him. So that would indicate that they may not, you know, it may not be giving it to us. With one out, it's a challenging situation in terms of what teams are going to do defensively in terms of first and third, throwing-wise. And then, you know, with two outs, it's more of a situation where I know you guys love the Mickey Mouse term. The Mickey Mouse play term, but that's when that play comes into play a little bit more.
Speaking of plays, after the, I guess it was it a Friday, I mean, all these games run together. After the play where O'Neal Cruz ran into left field and caused a couple of runs, how do you as the manager address something like that? Because that doesn't feel like a physical error, it feels like a mental error, and you know, is that just a communication thing with the left fielder and the shortstop? I mean, how do you handle? I mean, here's the thing: people call in and want to know, you know, why you weren't standing on the top of the step screaming at him and benching him. But it's something you address, right? You just sort of address it in your own way, maybe right. Behind closed doors.
Yeah, I think are you referring to the game in Houston when he ran into Brian in left center?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I got all the games mixed up, but that would have been like Thursday or Wednesday, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We did address it. I think in that game, if you go back and watch the first four innings of that game, O'Neill did not play well. I mean, he was sped up. He threw a ball away. And then in that situation, because he'd already thrown a ball away and made an error, he just, as a young player sometimes does, he tried to do too much. And he ended up going too far and ran into Brian. We did address it with him. We did talk to him. I think the things that stand out is he had, you know, two pretty tough backhand plays later in that game that he handled. And then he bounced back in the first game of the Diamondbacks series and had five hits. So the growth there. So standing on the top step and yelling at someone because they made a mistake, we're not going to do that. But things like that are addressed. We do address them. We do talk to him. And he realized he made a mistake.
Pirates manager Derek Shelton driving back from Latrobe, where he visited Steelers camp today. A couple more minutes with him on the Derek Shelton Show. So the big picture here, Shelty, is 500 since the All-Star break, I believe, facing some tough competition. And the losses, man, the losses have been just gut-wrenching lately. So I'm imagining the day off may have come at a good time for you guys.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially with, like you said, I mean, we had the lead in both games in the Diamondback series that we did not win and lost in some tough ways. And our schedule has been challenging, and it's going to continue to be challenging. You know, we're playing good teams. We're playing the Padres tonight, and we have them six of the next nine, and we have the Dodgers. And we have to continue to play good baseball because it's right there in front of us.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You guys are four out. Do you feel like you're sort of entering a really critical stretch to make sure that you know, because if you lose a couple more games in the standings, it becomes a numbers game to try and get back. I mean, do you feel like there's a really crucial next, say, 8 to 10 days just to make sure that you stay in it for the stretch run?
I think they are important. You know, they're very important games because we're playing teams that are ahead of us, and you know that makes it extremely important. But I think the other thing we have to realize is like we still have 50 games left. So you know, being really high off, you know, Saturday's game when Brian hits the homer, or being where we're at Sunday, I think we just have to make sure that we maintain and focus on each game. And yeah, was it a frustrating weekend? And you know, I think like you said, what I said after the game the other day about being mad. Yeah, I was there, but now we got to bounce back today and get after the Padres.
They ran a stat during the game the other night, Shelty, that you guys...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hadn't lost a bunch of games in a row in a long time, but it's also been hard to put together winning streaks. How, if you had to pick one factor, one thing that has to change in order to sort of gain some traction here and move up a little bit, what would that one thing be?
We got to finish games. And I think this last weekend was the definition of that. You know, we have to make sure, whether it's on the offensive side or the pitching side, we have to make sure that we finish games. And that has probably been the thing that's prevented us from having that extended winning streak that you're talking about.
Well, that's been a part of it. And what's interesting about that is you've had a good bullpen, but there have been times when the bullpen has sort of let you down. Is it just because of the nature of that position? How do you attain a level of consistency down there so you know that, you know, it seemed like for a while, if you guys got to this, you know, the fifth or the sixth inning with a lead, you were winning the game. How do you get sort of back to that level of consistency?
Yeah, that's a great question. The volatility of bullpens is something that is the most challenging thing throughout the course of the year, because guys are going to have stretches where they don't throw the ball as well, and then they're going to have stretches where they throw the ball as well as they have, you know, maybe at any point in the season or any point in their career. And it's just balancing that. And to give you the answer to that, I really wish I had it. Every manager wishes he had that. And I think in our case, it's just trying to make sure that, you know, we get the best matchups we possibly can. And that sounds like a simple answer, but it's not as simple as it. It's really not as simple as I wish it was.
Yeah, I remember in 2013, it was Watson, Grilly, Melanson, not in that order. Grilly closed the games, but it was like, it felt like they were at the height of their games together for a lot of the season. And I imagine that's what you need Holderman, Chapman, and Bednar to be. And it hasn't really, you know, it's never really been in sync where they've all three been clicking together for a long period of time, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, we saw David have his struggles early, then Chappie went through it. Holdy's struggling a little bit right now. When you get, and that's a good reference, when you get those three guys in sync or four guys in sync, then it changes the whole dynamic of the game. It changes the whole dynamic of your starters, of your middle guys. I mean, the other challenge we had this weekend was we lost Mitch. He was pitching about as well as he could pitch for a four-inning start because of an hour-and-a-half rain delay. So that will also tax your bullpen when you have to cover those kind of innings also. But getting three guys or four guys where they're all on at the same time, that's when you see stretches that are, you know, really good. And I think you pointed out, you know, that 13 team had those guys.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things I was going to ask you real quickly was you know, I watched that movie Moneyball, I don't know, last week, and I was thinking about that 2002 team of the A's, and I went and looked at some of their stats. And I did not realize this, but they had three pitchers who went 210 innings plus. And then I went to Major League Baseball stats for this year, and I don't know that there's going to be three pitchers in the both leagues combined that are going to get to 200 innings, which kind of tells you how the game has changed a little bit. But don't you think that would change maybe some of the dynamics of bullpens if we got back to pitchers, you know, going deeper into games?
Well, it would change the dynamic. I think now what we've done is there's better arms in bullpens now. You know, if you go back and use that year and look at the average velocity, mm-hmm. I would bet, and I don't even know this, but I would bet that the average fastball is 5 to 7 miles an hour harder. The average breaking ball is 4 to 5 miles an hour harder. So you're getting more power arms at the back end of bullpens that you know, every team is trying to use that advantage to make sure that they get the best people to face the best hitters.
Shelty, you'll be happy to know that I asked, excuse me, Destiny's Child this question earlier, but I need an answer from you on this because I've been thinking about it for a while, and it's really sort of manifested itself lately. Is pitchers' approaches at 0-2? I mean, we just saw they were great pitches, I think both of them, Holderman and Chapman. Skeens, in a recent game, lost a game late on an 0-2 pitch. Whatever happened to the automatic waste pitch on 0-2? Like, with starters, I just wonder if it's guys know they have an innings limit or a pitch limit and they don't want to waste anything. I don't know about relievers. It's just something I've been thinking about for a while. Approaches on 0-2 seem to have changed lately.
Yeah, I think that's a really good year. I mean, you're highlighting actually why we've lost a couple games with that point specifically. And that goes back to the execution part. And I don't know if it's so much, you know, wasting a pitch, but they have to be better executed. You know, even the two balls that we're talking about probably had too much plate for the count. Even though they're at the velocity they're at. You know, I mean, if the ball to Josh or to Jock is another ball off the plate with that velocity, are they getting it on the barrel? So I think it's a really good point in that when I'm talking, whether it's with you guys or, you know, post game about execution, that's really the point I'm talking about. I don't think you want to waste it, but you want to make sure it's in a better place. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. But still, with starters like Skeens and Jones, I've noticed just go right after people. Like, there's no such thing as I'm going to waste a pitch. It's like it's 0-2. All right, here you go. Here's another, you know, and they're, I think that's part of their personalities. Is that something, though, that's common across the league these days because of pitch counts and starters know they'll be limited? It's like, screw it. I'm just throwing strikes on 0-2 as well.
Yeah, I don't think so because, you know, they know that if the ball's in the zone that there's a better chance of being hit. I think in terms of, you know, our two young guys, that's going to be something they learn and they have the ability to execute because they both have really good stuff. And the execution is going to be learning, you know, when to go strike the ball. And what I mean by that is making it look like it's going to be a strike and it ended up being a ball. And I'm pretty confident that both Paul and Jared in those situations, that's going to be a step in their development with the repertoire that they have.
Lastly, and I know we address this almost every week, but I was looking at some analytics here that...
He is an analytics guy.
I know. You're making me smile. You guys watch Moneyball, and you're talking analytics. I love it.
What was I going
to
say?
But now? The thing I hate about Moneyball is they conveniently forget to add the fact they had 3 Cy Young Award candidates and 2 MVP candidates on that team. But go ahead.
Right.
I forgot what I was going to ask now.
I was going to ask about Jared Jones. I mean, you brought up Jared's name. I mean, is there any updates on where he's at?
Yeah, he's still continuing his rehab. He threw a live BP the other day, which he threw 3 ups. So I think we're going to have a pretty good idea over the next couple days what the next step is going to be for him. He threw a bullpen yesterday, so the next step is going to be him facing hitters again. We just got to determine, you know, when and where that's going to be.
Somebody texted in a question that I think is pertinent to our earlier discussion, Shelty, and then we'll let you go here. Was Chapman then available on Sunday? Were you willing to use him?
Yeah, I would have used him. Yeah, he was available.
Why didn't you?
Yeah, I think, well, that goes back to I had Beeks up. It would have been Chapman, you know, the next inning because it would have been a full inning with where they were at. And again, I mean, Beeks ended up being 4-5. Chappie would have been the first time 3 days in a row. So it's a good question. You know, it's what we didn't do. But it would have been Beeks if it would have been anybody in that inning. And then, you know, possibly Chap later.
We appreciate the time, Shelty.
All right, guys. I love that you're talking analytics. That just made my week.
Yeah, we'll continue, I guess, to do that. Good luck tonight. It's a huge series. Going to be a lot of people, I would imagine, at the ballpark these 3 days. A lot of eyes on the games.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. We I think we covered all the ground there.
Man, I'm just trying to put all that together.
Yeah.
Chapman being available.
Well, you know, here's the thing, too, is you don't think of this.
Skeens came out of the game. Skeens was not that great on Sunday. That's one of the things that happened is you needed that seven-inning game from him. So there's a lot happening.
Right, and people will point to the fact that Josh Bell hit that late home run on Friday night. But to me, you lose the game when you give up three home runs in the first four at-bats. You know, I know that you came all the way back, but, you know, I look at it even similar to basketball. If you fall way behind, you lose a lot of energy coming back. But the other part of it is there's no margin for error. If the other team scores another run or two, you probably are going to lose.
Well, the bottom line for me is that the back end of your bullpen for this team has to be like 2013. They spent a lot, and Chapman's been great lately. They spent a lot of money on him. They have an all-star closer. Holderman had a case for the All-Star game this year. They've got a number of talented arms also in that bullpen. I know Majinski is hurt right now, but I did go back and look at those numbers from 13, and those guys, Grilly blew two saves all year. Bednar blew three saves in the first 5 minutes of the season.
You know, one thing I'm going to tell you
they were all good for most of the year. They need the back end of the bullpen to finish games.
Remember they were called, what were they called? The Shark Tank, weren't they?
Is that
the nickname for them? You want to know, I remember, I think it was Pompeiani. Somebody did, you know, one of these takeout pieces on TV, you know, where they talked to those three guys and whoever the pitching coach was at the time. But one of the things they said, and this is something that is really frustrating to me when I watch baseball, and, you know, I go to a lot of the games, you know, at PNC Park. I love going to baseball games. I eat bad food and drink beers that are like $15 too much and whatever, but I love the ballpark.
Yeah.
You know, probably as long as the weather doesn't look, you know, as long as the weather holds up, I'll probably go tonight. But one of the things that they said that has always stuck with me is that whoever it was, it might have been Pomp, was like, well, you know, what's the key to your success? And they said, it sounds really simple, but it's what we do. And that is, we throw strikes.
Just not 0-2 strikes.
We come and throw strikes. You know what I mean? And so we don't fall behind in counts. You know, we don't try and, you know, nibble and get cute and all the other stuff. We try and get ahead of hitters and throw strikes. And the other reason I bring that up is because I watch a lot of baseball, and there's nothing I can one of my biggest pet peeves in baseball, if I was a manager, I would probably lose my you-know-what, is when guys come into the game and walk somebody.
Yeah.
You know, like.
So, yeah. And you knew Holderman didn't have it right away when that happened, he still made some good pitches.
He did, but my point is, if you just throw strikes and don't walk guys, I mean, how many times you see relievers come in, they walk someone, and that guy comes in to score?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? That's one of my biggest pet peeves when I watch baseball. That's one of my biggest pet peeves is, and that's why watching this Diamondbacks bullpen all weekend long, I had a headache. I was like, what are these guys doing? Like, just throw strikes.
The one kid out of their bullpen is electric.
Yeah, they've got a couple of really good arms.
What's his name? Who's the kid who comes in and throws 100 everywhere and has a slider that's just ridiculous?
Was it?
I know they moved on from Seawald. They changed closers.
No, is it Hernandez? Recently.
Yeah, it's the younger kid.
It's Hernandez.
He's unbelievable.
You're talking
about,
I think. Yes. Isn't that his name?
Yes. I don't know. I forget his name.
I think that's who you're talking about. Let me look real quick.
He was unhittable. You have the Paul Paws drop here while Paul looks up this thing.
Is it
it's
Martinez?
Paul Paws.
Martinez.
Yeah. Martinez. That's who.
That's the guy you're talking about. He's really good, and they have another guy that throws. It might be that Ryan Thompson. Is he another? He's another one that throws it really hard.
Yeah, and they added an arm. You know, they don't have a great pitching staff, but their lineup is just light years. They're a better team than the Pirates. I really feel that.
I tweeted this Sunday, and I said, the reason they're 4-2 against the Pirates is that they hit better than the Pirates. They run the bases better than the Pirates. They situationally hit better than the Pirates. And they field better than the Pirates. That's why they win.
I'll stick with hit better. I mean, that was just, you had the two biggest swings of the whole weekend.
What I'm saying is, Joe, what I mean is, they got guys on first. They found a way to get them to second. You know what I mean? They moved guys up. They ran the bases smart.
For the most part. And I mean, fielding, I didn't like their bunt in the game the other day. Wehner absolutely ripped them for that late sacrifice bunt when they're down by two. They gave away an out. Do you remember that one?
Right, but it ended up working for them.
Well, not really. They got a three-run homer. They gave away an out.
Right.
They were down two.
But their logic was the same as Shelton's in that they didn't want a double play. In other words, they wanted to give both of their big guns a chance to hit with somebody on base. And they
that's a hell of a strategy is to give away an out there. But yeah, I guess.
No, what I'm saying is they wanted to make sure that both of their guys that are they got a lot of guys that can hit home, but they're two big hitters, you know, that there are two guys that really hit home runs or whatever you want to say it. However you want to say it, they wanted to make sure that they got up with somebody on, so one swing of the bat, they could tie the game. That was their strategy. My point is, I'm just telling you, if you watched this series, and the series a couple of weeks ago,
yeah,
they fielded really well. They fielded really well, and they hit the ball well, and I just think they do a lot more. They do a better job of manufacturing. Now, obviously, it helps when you got a lot of guys that can hit, but...
Yeah, I mean... I hear you. I just what I saw was one team with studs in the middle of their order.
Well,
that's what I saw.
So how about the middle of the order? How about what's the kid's name that leads off for them?
Yeah, everybody.
What's his name? The guy that leads off for them, Marte. He's their leadoff hitter usually.
Is he?
He batted second the last one, but I mean he's either bats first or second. They've got him. He's hitting. What's his slash line? And he had a bad weekend. His slash line is like 300 something.
He's batting 300 OPS of 923.
Here's the thing.
300, 366, 557 OPS of 923.
Yeah, that's to me.
That's the guy you bat first or
second. You can play, you can move runners and field well and do all the things you talked about, but if you trade the Diamondbacks middle of the order hitters for the Pirates, then the Pirates win 4 of 6 or more. Or more. Those guys delivered the big swings and the crushing swings in that series. And to me, the Pirates' bullpen has been the biggest disappointment of the year. The biggest disappointment. It's just they're supposed to be great, locked down great, and they haven't been. And I thought that these games against Arizona, the Pirates still got good pitching at times. They say good pitching beats good hitting, and that might be true, but great hitting beats good pitching. Great hitting beats good pitching.
Well, look at it like this. Among guys that play a lot, they've got three that are 800 or better OPS, a fourth at 784, and then they just added Josh Bell.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've got guys that, you know, Marte, but Peterson is the guy that it would just torture the Pirates.
And they didn't even have Christian Walker in that series.
I know. Right. Well, who would have been better than Bell? I mean, he was... That home run against Chapman, it's never happened before in the StatCast era. Somebody would take 103 miles an hour to the opposite field for a homer. It was ridiculous.
How about I was at an establishment watching that game, and the first time Josh Bell came up, dude was like, I bet he's going to hit a home run just because he tortures the Pirates. Bang. And then he came up later in the game... I bet he's going to hit home runs just because he torches the Pirates.
Yeah. It was crushing blows just decided those games. Anyway, coming up next, I promised some TJ Watt quotes, didn't I? And we're going to have those. Which quarterback he'd love to take down to set the sack record with should he threaten that record again this year. And also, he didn't like a question from Kay Adams that he heard. And I'll play you that one as well. Listen to this show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Paul and I can both speak to the importance of getting your heart checked out. Your heart care matters. Get your heart checked at UPMC Heart and Vascular Institute with just incredible professionals over there who will tell you if you got to change something or will give you, you know, peace of mind that everything's good. They really know what they're doing, and it's simple and it's fast, and you should take the time to do it at the UPMC Heart and Vascular Institute. Up next, little TJ Watt sitting down with Kay Adams and Latrobe and had some pretty interesting things to say. You'll hear it next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.